The following is presented by the Cheeky Bastards.
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers, and welcome to the 10th edition of Dropping a Bruce, the monthly podcast where we watch every single one of Bruce Willis's 40 direct-to-video releases from his acting career to see if he took the role for a paycheck and dropped a deuce, or if, in fact, he took the role and gave it his all and dropped a Bruce. I am the Notorious Scott K.
And from not-so-great Britain, this is Steve.
And together, we will be your drunken stewards on this 40-month journey through the lesser-known movies of Mr. Bruce Willis's filmography. This month's stop finds us at the quarter mark of our excursion. That means we are 10 films in with 30 more to go. And what better way is there to celebrate the holidays than with 2017's American crime comedy, Once Upon a Time in Venice? Mr. Smith, this is odd for me to say, but happy holidays. As our listeners listen to this, it's almost Christmas here in America and the rest of the world to celebrate the Christian holiday. And while we record, however, it is just early October, and I have already been given a gift from my wife that I have called Hovid. Now, she did not enjoy it when I said I had, or that she had Hovid and then gave it to me. I said to her, you let someone else inside you, now you're sick. You got Hovid.
You've got be
bad. And she fairly shared it with me.
But as this is kind of the Christmas episode, you've got Hovid.
Yes. I'm actually very lucky. I'm not going to get into anything about it, but I did get vaccinated long back when it happened. And I did get one booster. And I'll say this about that and only this. She had it worse. She did not have a booster. She definitely got it worse. Thank God. I was a little worried that I was going to get it bad. I've had it maybe 3 days. I've had a couple of body aches, a little bit of a stuffy like nose, more like a cold symptom than anything else. I've been pretty lucky, and I'm almost done with it as it is. So, there it is. But if you have a loved one who gets you Hovid, it's because they let someone else inside their body, and they gave you Hovid.
Wow.
Would you expect anything else from the Cheeky
dark,
Bastards?
An immediate dark turn.
We took a quick left.
Jesus Christ.
Here comes the jingle bell. Jingle bell.
Scott's getting divorced. He's dying. It's all gone to hell.
Christmas. That's what happens at Christmas, right?
Jesus
it's
Christ.
The happiest time of year. You get to spend time with your family.
I switched my microphone on 2 minutes ago, and already all this has happened.
And we haven't even gotten into this gem of a film that
gives.
However, before we dive into this, Mr. Smith, I know it's when our listeners listen to this, we are also like, here's the great thing about us getting these done early, is we are making assumptions that when this is being listened to in real time, the world is okay. Things are going good. Like, we're jovial. The whole world could be on fire as far as we know when people actually even try to listen to this. So what are your future holiday plans? Because I know that your job shuts down around this time that people are listening to this, and you're off for almost 2 months.
Yeah, so if we sort of, we go forward in time to what's been listened to now, I guess.
As we go forward in time, but back in time.
Yeah. Woo.
This is truly Back to the Future.
This truly is.
We are. This is the real
thing. Let me tell you. I'm a week away from a nice, long, 7-week break from my job. So that's what I'm looking forward to. That's the best part of any Christmas for me.
Yes, I always know that this time of year, but also this is the time of year that, I mean, right now, when we're recording here in the future past, movie watching is starting to maybe pick up for me a little bit because we're getting closer to that cold weather shutdown.
Yeah.
But by the time people are listening to this, we'll be in that full, like, I'll be watching 25 movies a month weird thing that happens at that time of year where, like of the 150, 200 movies I watch in a year, most of that is watched from December.
Yeah.
To like April. And then after that, I watch 5 to 10 in the month. So I'm like getting 100 plus early on. That's very scarce.
Sad bastard that I am. In January, I tend to watch, I'm not shitting you. In January, I tend to watch roughly 3 a day.
Oh no, I remember you saying like you'd had close to 100 after January.
But I tend to do that. I tend to get as many in there in January because there are a few months in the year I can barely get 3 a week in. So I tend to just kind of do a crash course in January.
It's cold as hell to do. And
unfortunately, the shittiest month of the year. It's fucking cold.
And it's some of the worst months of films, like in the theaters. Like everything usually hits by Christmas so they can get the Oscar. And any Oscar movies that don't get out in the major theaters usually hit it in January. So you might get a few. but January really to almost April before they start to kick off the summer months again. You know, they kind of kick it off late spring, early summer.
Right.
You get a bunch of bullshit in those months. So there's not a lot to go to the theater for.
No,
you're pretty much stuck at home watching things you hadn't seen already.
It's cold. Everyone's broke. Everyone's depressed. Because it's just the perfect time to get up in the morning, make a pot of coffee, and just chill out and just watch. You know, that's where I can tend to, like, I can pick a bunch of movies out.
Mm-hmm.
And today I'm going to watch these four movies because I'm barely going to leave the house.
Mm-hmm.
I don't watch much TV. I'm strictly a movie head, so I can just fit. And I tell you what, my physical media, it's out of control again at the moment. I'm buying so much stuff. I ain't even got room.
You're like
for
a
all,
squirrel.
So.
You're stocking up for the winter right now. These are all your
nuts. I'm addicted. Physical media, the Blu-rays that are, I mean, this is off on a tangent, but the amount of these boutique labels that are just releasing these special editions of all these cult gems out there. I'm a fiend for it. They've got me strung out. So, like, in December, January, I'll be able to catch up on watching all this crazy shit that's being released. It's an expensive hobby.
Well, folks, if you are looking to give Steve the Squirrel some of your nut, we will make sure that you can find us on the emails, and you can send your packages to Mr. Squirrel here so he can get some more nuts for the winter.
Honestly, so the New York skyline on top of my wardrobe right now is just stacks of Blu-rays. I'm running out of room.
Well, we still want to say happy holidays and thank you to everyone on the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network, who is the majority of the people who listen to us. We are truly appreciative that you've been with us 10 months now, which is quite insane that we've made it this far. Also, we hope that you are enjoying our main podcast, The Cheeky Bastards, as we just recently wrapped and we added back in October. We were added to the network as we did a tonal shift towards talking about action movies, and we did a 3-month slog through that of Michael Bay. And hopefully you have just enjoyed 2 weeks ago our Christmas special, and hopefully you'll join us again in 2 weeks when we kick off the new year with some more stuff. We don't want to give it away because even though we're recording in the past for the future, things could change, so we don't want to say something and all of a sudden you're like, these cocksuckers are lying. But thank you again to all of you who listen to this show on the network, and also if you have also made your way over to the main Cheeky Bastards podcast. And without further ado, it is time for us to jump into the...
What you talking about, Willis?
Just the facts, man. Just the facts.
This film was released in 2017, written by Mark and Rob Cullen, and directed by Mark Cullen, starring Bruce Willis, Jason Momoa, John Goodman, Thomas Middleditch, Fom Johnson, Adam Goldberg, and Jessica Gomes. With a running time of 94 minutes, it holds a 5.3 rating on IMDb and a 21 critics and 28 audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. A down but not out LA private investigator seeks out the ruthless gang that stole his dog Buddy, while two vengeful brothers, a loan shark, and other colorful characters seek him out. RLJE Films and Voltage Pictures Group presents Once Upon a Time in Venice.
We've been robbed!
What?
They took everything. They took Buddy.
Where are you going?
I'm gonna go and get my dog.
I didn't see anything.
They stole my dog.
A delicacy in my country, right?
I never said that.
You thought it.
I'm gonna need your help, John.
Okay.
Wear extra underpants.
Why?
So you want the dog back?
It's the only thing I want.
Lupe took your dog and a briefcase filled with my cocaine. You find her, I'll give your dog back.
Got an address on that?
Google it, Holmes. What are you doing?
I gotta go steal back some drugs. If I can get my dog back. Wanna come?
Sounds like fun.
Could be dangerous.
Maybe I'll die.
I've got a boner for the first time in a year.
You got 24 hours, Holmes.
You probably don't care, but you're saying 24, but your hands are actually saying 42.
Got you!
No.
What is this?
Banana walnut.
It's got a hint of cinnamon, yo.
Mr. Willis plays Steve Ford, a skateboard-loving ex-LA cop who, if you read the stuff on his wall, was not a very good cop. For reasons we will never know and never explain, but just trust us, the wall says he's a disgraced ex-cop, and that's all you need to know. He has turned into the only, apparently, private dick, no pun intended, in the Venice Beach area of California. Oh, and did we mention he also has a dog named Buddy? That is who Bruce Willis is. However, a very, very positive note is this is a movie starring Mr. Willis. We'll get into that in a second. Crazy enough, this movie, like three other films we have watched in the 10, looks like it was ready to have a worldwide theatrical release, or at least especially in America. And for whatever reasons, it never really came to fruition. Those movies being the very first movie we ever talked about on this podcast 10 months ago, Assassination of a High School Principal. Did it again. Assassination of a High School President. Then Catch 44. And then last month's Marauders. Really, all three of those movies felt like, oh, these were definitely made for theatrical releases. Just the cast alone says this is a theatrical release. Yeah, some of the other movies we've talked about, you get like one or two people and you're like, oh, okay, we're scraping the bottom here. These aren't going to anywhere.
You only need to get a couple of minutes into those and you know where things are going.
And then the cast of this film and the production value and everything else about it also screams, this was supposed to be a theatrical release, which means that in 2017, Mr. Willis released two films and none of them were theatrical releases. So a zero in the theatrical release department in 2017 for Mr. Willis, a first in his career. So before we dive in case my blurb earlier wasn't enough, let's give you the plot, veil thin as it may be. But let's see if I've done a good job of deciphering this. When a private detective from Venice Beach, who's handy with the ladies but bad with punches, dog Buddy, who he's apparently wild about, is stolen by some local thugs for reasons will be left unknown. An unlikely alliance is forged with the devious leader Spider, who may or may not have ulterior motives. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Once Upon a Time in Venice. This is an actual Bruce Willis film. 10 in, and he is the star. He is the main character. He is the lead. This can officially be put down as a Bruce Willis film. Whether it drops a Bruce or Deuce, this is all on Bruce's shoulders.
But this is the Bruce we know and love.
No, I felt the same throughout the entire film. I was like, I already know what I'm going to put down for some of the stuff at the end. I'm like, but I would like to just point out something. Now, I know here in America, we are known for violence. Those red stripes didn't get red for no reason at all. You know what I'm saying? There's a little blood that we like to spill, get them stripes red. All right. However, this movie was released over Mr. Smith's area of the woods as L.A. Vengeance. Which is not only a bit aggressive, but it definitely missells this film as a crime thriller.
Definitely.
And if you bought this film, went to his film with Bruce Willis and thought, I'm going to go see L.A. Vengeance. You know what it almost is? It's almost like the people who watched the Nick Cage movie Pig.
Thought it was going to be like John Wick.
Neon did a horrible job of saying it's like John Wick with a pig. And everyone thought, oh, this is going to be like his character for Mandy, but like after he's been like living in the woods for a long time and he's lost Mandy, now he loses his pig and he's gonna go fucking ape shit. And none of that happens. That would be the same thing I thought if I saw L.A. Vengeance and Bruce Willis. Yeah. I'd be like,
if I may just say though, saying it was sold in the UK as L.A. Vengeance, let me just clear something. It wasn't sold at all in the UK as anything. I think this was one of those movies that just, honestly, as from what I can remember, it just hit Netflix.
Yeah, probably.
And it hit Netflix as Once Upon a Time in Venice. It didn't hit on Netflix as L.A. Vengeance.
Well, because they probably, Netflix was like, there's nothing vengeful going on in this film.
Well,
isn't. You know, I mean, it's just, that's just not what this film is.
Honestly, this L.A. Vengeance was news to me. I was like, no, I saw this show up on Netflix at the time.
Into the makers of the film. Wait, there's L.A. Vengeance?
Huh? Yeah. Uh-huh. It's in L.A. Is there vengeance? I don't know.
I'll start off with a couple of things. The Cullen brothers, I think that's the names, right? The Cullens?
That's right, yeah.
The Cullen brothers,
Mark
both
and Rob,
wrote
yeah.
one directed. They are a befuddling couple of guys. Because this film has moments of just absolute, oh, I loved it, to then just like, what? Okay. It's like a roller coaster that doesn't really have high peaks and steep declines. It's like you're going through the hillside and you get a little bit of butterflies in your stomach, but not as much as you'd like. Is that a fair assumption of this movie? And it's not a bad thing, but it's just like, you got it. First of all, you got on the ride not thinking it's going to be anything at all. I'll be honest. I got on the ride going, okay, at least Bruce is starring in this. The first two full scenes of the film, I'm like, all right, I'm kind of in. And then once we get to where we meet Sparta for the first time, that's the first, like, oh, okay, this is a long haul. Is my early assessment of what I saw from the film, since you've seen it two full times, I saw the first 15 minutes one night, and then I had to stop because I had to do something else, and then I rewatched it again today. So I've seen the first 15 minutes twice, and then the whole movie once. And I will be going back to watch it again because I did enjoy it.
Well, the way I would say, I just explained to you before we started recording that I like to just take the movie in on the first, so just watch it. And then the second time, that's when I can sort of figure out who my favorite actor or character or the best line of dialogue, favorite scenes. I can't do that on the initial viewing because otherwise I'm too distracted. Mm-hmm. So I watched the movie the first time. And firstly, like I stated earlier, it's just nice to see a proper Bruce Willis movie again. Mm-hmm. Right, don't get me wrong when I say this, but I'm sure you've seen Dolomite Is My Name. The Eddie Murphy movie,
yes.
Right. I'm not comparing the two in any other way because, I mean, Dolomite Is My Name is absolutely fantastic in every way. Practice. Mm-hmm. But again, it was just nice to see Eddie Murphy again, being Eddie Murphy, doing what he does and doing it well. I felt much the same way about this because Bruce Willis is having a good time. He's, you know, actiony when he has to be actiony. He's there with the quips. You know, he's
his Hudson Hawk and his Moonlighting character wrapped into one. Leaning into his comedic presence that he has.
Yes, which is pretty much what he was best at anyway, in my opinion.
Yes, because John McClane was supposed to just be this wise ass. He became a tough guy, but if you even look at John McClane, he's just really a snarky little fucking asshole. As John McClane goes on, it's like Rambo. Rambo gets tougher and tougher as the movies go, and they weren't that way in their very first movies.
They weren't these
hard-boiled guys.
Firstly, so it's just nice to see Bruce Willis in a Bruce Willis movie in the lead role, you know. And I often see these like snarky reviews of people saying things like, oh, you know, for half the movie it's just someone standing in for the back of Bruce Willis's head or whatever, like he's not really even in the movie. I'm like, no, he is in this movie, and he is all of him is in this movie.
I don't want to investigate too far into that.
Okay, I'm happy to kind of So he's in this movie. Bruce Willis is front and center in this movie. You know, and that in itself is refreshing.
He's got a great cast.
Yeah, rather than just seeing him at the beginning and then showing up at the end, he's in this movie and he is surrounded by
It's a spectacular cast.
An above average cast.
Who even some of the players you don't even know, and we'll get to the men of the night. Some of these characters are just spectacular. They're like, they really, like, you know, we've had a couple in some of the other movies, and you're like, oh, we've had, you know, 50 Cent sits up for somebody, and you're like, an alum from The Wire is in the movie. He plays the blacked up, the prince. that's the real prince.
Wood Harris is not.
And that would have been in a lesser directed movie, that would have been 50 Cent. And would have been terrible, but he owns the fucking role, right? Like, and he's only on screen in three scenes and for maybe five minutes total. And he's great
in the
He's
in that.
Anyone who flashes before your eyes really does an amazing job in the film.
And I'd say like 90% of them are all familiar faces.
Yes.
I mean, there were people who I think I must have seen them in this show or that show.
Yes.
I mean, because Wood Harris, he was in Justified as well. Yes. So, I mean, Wood Harris, he's been in a lot of stuff.
My note for this movie was, this movie has a veil-thin plot, and we're going to get through it, and doesn't know what it's trying to be. It's either trying to be a Tarantino film on weed or the film Inherent Vice on Ambien. That being said, it's still very watchable. Those are my notes. Like, it drags at points, and this is what the Coen brothers have done to me in this movie. They're amazing scenes. Like the opening scene, his monologue at the skate park to those boys to introduce us to him was fantastic. Unnecessary completely, but absolutely appreciated after the 9 months we have gone through to see him come out and just give a great scene. And like you said, every movie he's been in up to this point, except for the first movie we did, he has been a cop or a bad guy. He's been a tough guy. He's been John McClane adjacent, whatever movie you're going into. He's always playing a version of tough guy. Bruce Willis meets like Clint Eastwood stare. Like, I'm serious. I'm always very serious.
Yeah.
And for him to be one, not even the tough guy, gets his ass kicked in every scene, does none of the ass kicking, does some ridiculous stuff, can't shoot for shit. Like, for him to not play the type normal, it's fantastic. It was great to see him be something that was all, it was completely against type. That was fun. Then the next scene, like, he's got a partner named by Thomas Middleditch. And if you don't know Thomas Middleditch, he was in Silicon Valley, TV show on HBO. But before that, he was also the Verizon Fios guy for a long time. You'd seen him on that. He's, you know, he's like a classic dork.
He's been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he's been a lot. He plays a great side character for him for most of the film. And he's his like little partner. And he is sent to follow this really hot girl, and he goes to some meeting, and it's a sex and ops meeting, and he's like, oh shit, went in the wrong meeting. And that's a great scene. And then like everything leading up to like the opening where you talked about seeing all the Bruce, good stuff. And then he runs into a pizza shop, and we'll get on to it from there in a minute, but the opening is good. And then there's like these moments of lull because they are good at writing scenes. They have found a way to write some good scenes, and we've talked about this, like Hudson Hawk was made for one reason only, and that was so Bruce Willis's character could turn and go, I guess you won't be joining the HAG convention this July. Which is absolutely bonkers, but that's pretty much felt like that was the line they had, and like, we're making a movie. It's like if anyone is a fan of Kevin Smith, he talked about how he was making a Superman movie, or why the Superman movie didn't work is the one guy wanted like a spider, and that spider ends up showing up, a giant spider, and that ends up showing up in Wild Wild West for no reason. So like these people have these ideas and these movies pop up. Well, the Cullen brothers, they're not the Coen for sure, but they have some talent. They're not without talent. They just need more polish, and they've got the ability to write good scenes. The problem is they have a couple of good scenes, but to get to the next good scenes, they don't know how to get there. So they just kind of like go, well, we're just going to do this. And you kind of go along with them, and you kind of get a little bit bored, and then all of a sudden you go, well, that paid off. You know what I mean? Like you go, okay, it took a long time to go up the fucking hill to get to the next bend, but the bend was fun, and I enjoyed it. And then you're like, oh, all right, we're going to do another long one, and then boom.
See, I think this is all so irreverent, and I'm not even sure the plot is a big deal.
No, it's not.
I think that this is one of those little quirky ensemble movies where it's just about the characters and the cast and this kind of patchwork plot. And like, you're absolutely right on one hand, but on another hand, I think this is quite a self-aware movie.
As the movie went along, I fell more and more in love with it and realizing what was happening because these guys have gotten some great actors and they're saying, you know what? Have fun. Have fun with
what you are. Let him
because
loose, yeah.
John Goodman, we first meet him. At one point, I was like, I hope he just takes his own life because whatever he's doing, like in the beginning of the movie, I was kind of like, he's absolutely useless.
He is in the first part of the movie.
But the second half of the movie, he gets funnier. But it should have happened early. This should have been a buddy cop movie, which is where the problem was, right?
Listen, I know what you're saying, but no, I think you're being too kind because I think John Goodman is in the wrong fucking movie. He doesn't know how to play the guy. I think he's probably done this as a favor to Bruce.
But he's hilarious for whatever.
That's not the point. That's not the point. That is not the point. He's funny. Yeah, he's always funny. That's what he does. But he's all over the place in this. And you could say, well, no, he's meant to be this kind of flaky guy.
I don't think he was. I just don't think they had much written for him early on to bring him in because they needed him for the end. But they had to introduce him at a certain point.
Yeah, but he's not good at the end either. He doesn't really do anything at the end either.
He just says stupid shit in the way he acts it. Like remember how you said
about... That's what he does all the way through the
movie. He did a Thomas Jane. He pulled out
your fucking mouth?
He just said, you know what? I'm John fucking Goodman. I'm going to do this fucking movie this way. He goes, the first hour, you didn't give me shit to do.
Yeah, but you can't do that every 30 seconds. He's all over the place. He's the worst thing about this movie. But he's not bad.
How about this? His character, how they used his character was the worst thing. Yeah, I would agree
there.
He
didn't have a character. They had no character.
I agree, but...
Do you know what? I think he's trying to be like Jeff Bridges. He's trying to be like the Lebowski.
Maybe. You might be right.
The kind of loser, sort of spaced out surfer dude. But he's not capable.
No, but I also would blame that. Like you said, it's on the script where we should call it a skateboard. It's like we're basically skateboarding.
You don't know what you're doing.
Venice.
You don't take the fucking role.
Hey,
okay.
He probably
John
got good
Goodman's
money for this.
Got enough money.
Hey, look, he's got, that's hooker money. How dare you? Mr. Goodman enjoys the, no, I'm just kidding, I have no idea. No idea if that's true or not.
No. But anyway, that's not, because John Goodman's not in it much anyway, so it's not hardly a big deal that he's such a...
All right, so we'll get back on the track. We'll get on the train.
Let's get back on track. It's the John Goodman. You're not watching this movie for John Goodman, okay?
First scene's amazing. Bruce Willis's speech. May or may not come up at the end. It was amazing. Then we get Thomas Middleditch, who right off the bat, he is, whether he's typecast, he's a Jesse Eisenberg, Michael Cera kind of character. You always know he's going to be the lovable loser, and he's fucking perfect in it. So why go against type? Him going into the sex the Sexaholics Anonymous with that hot girl. Him then having to tell his speech after the guy talks about he's jerking off 40 hours. Like, all I thought about was like, damn, Steve, you got a guy who's up competition with you. He's
jizzhot.com.
Jizzhot, that was fantastic. And then Thomas is like, yeah, you know, I'm usually good with the older ladies, like 50, 60, 80, centennials.
Those
first two scenes, I'm like, this is a great comedy. And the reason I think I'm upset a little bit is because John Goodman, I think, is meant to be, it's like supposed to be like a, I feel like it should have been a buddy private detective thing. Like him Absolutely. And Goodman should have been the detectives. And this Middleditch is the guy who's like their secretary kind of thing, like he is. And it would have been a great, this is going to sound strange, three-way comedy. It would have been a fantastic, much better movie.
I think literally everyone in this movie upstages John Goodman.
Yes. Well, he doesn't get anything to do to the end of the movie, though.
He doesn't do anything at the end of the movie either.
Well, he's supposed
You're
to...
You're making it sound like at the end he comes into his own and he does all this
in
stuff.
In comparison to the rest of the movies in...
That's, we see him once at a surf shop. You are setting a very low bar for him.
Listen, all I'm saying, folks, is we see him at a surf shop he owns, and we find out that he's losing it for something. Then suddenly he needs the help of Bruce for some stupid scene, and he disappears. And we don't see him again until the end of the movie. So as much as I'd love to take a shit on John Goodman, he's not in it much in the beginning to be memorable. At the end, he's in the whole thing, and you're like, okay, he's a little bit better now. Like, all of a sudden, he's like, well, he's been woken up. And it's just like, oh, this is the character.
If you're in the movie for 5 minutes and you suck, then that's something to talk about.
Well.
Okay? If you're in it for 5 minutes and no one can remember you, that's fine, okay? But if you're in it for 5 minutes and that's like, man, this guy fucking sucks.
He didn't get anything juicy to the end. Everything else is going to these other guys.
Nothing. You're talking about the end. Like, what happens? What does he do at the end? What does he do at the end?
At the end, they team up. It's like it becomes a buddy cop movie at the end with him and Bruce Willis, which we don't see coming because John Goodman's a fucking doorknob in the first round.
Exactly.
We hardly see him.
Out of nowhere.
But that's not John Goodman's fault, is what I'm saying.
But when they do the Serrano the Bergerac thing where Bruce Willis is in the car and he's talking to him through the mic when he's having the meeting with his wife, that he ignores everything Bruce Willis says for him to do.
Well, they make him stare off into the distance and hear music. That's not John Goodman's fault. I'm just saying. They're saying, John, here's what we want you to do.
He read the fucking script.
He probably liked the end of it. I don't know. And they
Jesus
were like,
Christ,
look, John,
man.
Can you read the script?
Just let
and
it go.
Like,
let it fucking
fine.
Go. Let it
I'm
go.
I'm going to defend John Goodman in this movie because he
well,
did it.
Well, you know,
it wasn't
that's unwarranted and you're flaking around just as bad as he is. That's the COVID, mate. It's
Listen,
fucking
he
your
can't.
Head.
He's old. He's mad that John Goodman's still getting roles and Steve hasn't been seen.
I'll tell you, what I will say, I know this was made in 2017.
6 years ago.
Yeah, John Goodman looks old in that then.
So did Bruce. My wife came out and she goes, is that Bruce Willis? I'm like, yeah. She goes, he looks old. I said, well, he is old. And I said, that's also 6 years ago. I was like, if you think, and that was made, I think they filmed that like 2015, 2016. So we're talking
Bruce
7 years ago.
Bruce Willis looks the same now. John Goodman, man. This is true.
Well,
John Goodman's
yeah,
not.
I know.
John, he was looking a
well,
bit gaunt.
Well, unfortunately, I think some of it is he was heavy, and I don't mean, but when you lose a lot of weight and you
yeah,
had
you
a lot of weight,
up.
Your skin gets. I mean, the weight goes away,
neck.
But the skin's still there.
He's got the old turkey neck. Yeah.
Gobble gobble.
But anyway, John Goodman terrible in this. Let's move on.
Mr. Goodman, I apologize. We here at Dropping a Bruce are not
John
against. We do not make. He would like to fuck you though, Mr. Goodman. So if you would like to reach out on our socials,
hey, you got to take it where you can get it.
Speaking of it, great segue.
Oh.
There was finally some sex scenes in this. No pun intended. I knew it was coming too, because when Thomas drops off the girl from the Sexaholics Anonymous thing to Bruce's, and then you eventually find out that Bruce really just has been banging this girl the whole time, knew she was a sexaholic, which is very, they keep that under wraps because the brothers show up and beat him up or whatever. But later in the film, you realize he knew where she was going to be. He just wanted basically his buddy to pick him up and drop him off. That's basically what it was, because it makes no sense. Your brothers are looking for you, but my boss wants you to bring him to his house. Anyways, I like that. But there was finally some sex, and then this is where I knew the movie was going to, I was going to be enjoying it, is besides the sex, because we've been bitching about this the whole time. Just do something. He comes out, and he's got the gun, and you're like, okay, here comes the Bruce Willis we know. And they got the drop on him. They beat his ass. Unfortunately, they pull a face off where they forget to not allow the stunt double to face the camera. And you, for 1 to 2 frames, you see the guy who's his stunt double. And you're like, okay, that's not Bruce Willis's face. I was like, that's not him. I'm like, Steve's going to love that. Steve's a real stickler about seeing the wrong guy's face. It's not that hard. It's really not that hard.
Drives me nuts.
And again, I'm sorry. I know people are going, oh, you're sucking Tarantino's dick. But watch Kill Bill and you tell me in the House of Blue Leaves which one's Uma and which one's Zoe Bell. Tell me if you see Zoe Bell's face. You do not, because they fucking know how to film the goddamn thing to make sure she doesn't turn to camera.
Amen.
That's the point. You never turn to camera. If you're going to throw somebody, if you have to throw Willis, throw him onto a blanket or whatever, a pillow in front of you, and you just throw him forward and he falls onto a bed or whatever it is. You can show his face, but if you're not gonna, keep that motherfucker's head turned.
I'm telling you, Face Off costs twice as much as Kill Bill, probably. And that has got that is the worst fucking example of not giving a shit about us seeing this. That is the when the so-called John Travolta and Nicolas Cage are flying through the air off that speedboat, I'm just like, do you think I'm fucking handicapped? I will not be able to say that is the worst culprit of that ever. And I can't watch that film on that principle alone. But anyway,
we might be watching it later this season, probably.
And I will tear it to fucking pieces. And anyone who defends it as well is going fucking down. Anyway, I swear to God, this movie, Once Upon a Time in Venice, regardless of what Scott has said, this movie.
I just saw that. I thought Steve's going to be like, I was like, there it is again, Steve. Like, you mentioned it once. And from now on, the ghost of John Woo is coming after you.
Scott's going to bring that up. I fucking know.
It's my first no. I go, Steve's going to love this. The ghost of John Woo is after you.
Do you know what? Where I guess I did, I like it. Do you know what? I don't think there's anything about this movie I didn't like.
Well, the great
thing. The only thing I did like about this movie was John Goodman. Anyway.
He then goes running out and jumps into the pool after his gun that got thrown out the window, because his brothers, and there's some big dudes, and so they, I mean, I would jump into the pool too. He goes into the pool, gets his gun, and as he goes in, now look at this is when I knew, because I watched it the first time and I wrote down, I was like, when the fuck did his pants fall off in the pool? And I go, oh, and there's some dick and balls. So I wouldn't watch it again, and then I realized what these guys are doing. I realized they're like, you know what, fuck it, we're going to go all balls out. And they went all balls out. I said, well, we said we didn't care if we had to see dick and balls to get some sex scenes and some titties. Well, we got plenty of male full frontal from Bruce's stunt double in the scene. So next time, we will be careful what we wish for. Because we have been talking about, I don't care if we have to see some swinging dick for some of this. And sure enough, no sooner did there be a half titty being shown, the next thing I know is I'm watching Bruce Willis and his stunt double hold their dick and balls going down a shred on a skateboard, running from a pool. And that scene lasted 5 minutes. I was like,
well, plus he's in a car chase. The cops are chasing him, and then he does that thing where he's hiding behind the traffic sign, which I thought was like, you know, hiding behind a sign naked was a bit of a Die Hard with a Vengeance reference. Yep. Maybe I don't
know.
And he
put the gun up his ass,
and he's got a pistol up his fucking bum hole. do you know what?
I just knew right then and there. I was like, you know what? These guys know what movie they're making. But that's the thing, is they could have just strung together a few more funny things in between. It would have been one of the great comedies. Yeah. It could have been fun comedy.
No, I think there is a plot. It's just
it's loose. And it's it can be irreverent. I think that the one drags it is sometimes it tries to have a little bit of a serious tone so that we will give a shit a little bit, because in the end of the day, the movie is about his dog being taken. And I'll be honest with you, who gave a fuck about that dog? Bruce didn't. Bruce didn't even know he had a dog.
I fucking did.
No,
you ain't got a dog.
No, I have a dog. And I'll be honest with you, he had 7 chances in that film to hold on to that dog, and he never did. And not once did that dog go running to him and be like, there's my man. He couldn't get that dog out of his sight quick enough.
I disagree.
So the dog was just another MacGuffin that didn't mean anything.
He
didn't
have the fuck with a guy's dog. And he fucking says
he does.
With gritted teeth. You don't fuck with a guy's dog. And Andy, listen, shut the fuck up. Anyone out there who's got a dog knows what I'm saying. You don't back with a guy's dog.
Well, how about this? You must love your dog more than Bruce Willis did in this movie, because he was like, I guess I'll get the dog.
He spends the entire movie.
He was more upset that Thomas Middleditch's character ended up banging Nola, the girl that he had been sleeping with, and ended up dating him.
He doesn't find that out till the end.
Exactly.
So that's
He was more upset at that moment than he was that the dog was dating.
Well, she was hot, though.
I'm not disagreeing with you on this.
I don't know if you are.
I'm just saying that he
spends thousands of dollars. He gets shot at and he gets the shit kicked out of him over that dog. So go fuck yourself with it. He doesn't care about that
dog.
He doesn't care
about the dog. Listen, ladies and gentlemen.
Watch the movie and you'll see that Scott may not have actually watched it.
No. You'll watch and you'll go, you know what? I forgot there was a dog in this fucking thing.
He's all over the place.
All I'm saying is John Wick went through a whole lot of people for a dog. How about this?
It wasn't about
Here's the thing with the dog was. The dog was dead, opportunity to give us chances to meet new and fun characters. And I appreciate it. The fucking Yuri, the fucking loan shark who spends his time on Venice Beach with the fucking metal detector.
Man.
And that giant gold lame bikini. That's fucking awesome.
I nearly tossed my cookies, man.
He's the guy, if anyone doesn't know, if you've seen the Borat movie, he is the brave gentleman who's heavy set, who in just one of the most comedic genius moments I've seen ever, ran through that convention naked with Borat, and then they wrestle naked on the bed. That man deserved an Oscar for that. Was that takes a lot. That takes a lot to do, and to trust in Sacha Baron Cohen and what you're doing, and for him to do that, and then to watch him on the beach, I was like, this. I love this guy. Like, everyone's talking about women body positivity. Fucking Yuri over here, huh? In the gold diaper.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Hey, we haven't yet mentioned good old Andy Goldberg as Lou the Jew.
And I love that even in the movie they pause and go, whoa, whoa, whoa. That's what he calls himself.
Although in the defense of the movie, his surname is Jewison, isn't it? Yes. It's Lou Jewison. So it's Lou the Jew isn't quite as inflammatory as people may think before everyone starts fucking canceling us or whatever.
Here's what I wrote down for this movie. I wrote down. Sexaholic, loan shark in gold bathing suit, graffiti artist who specializes in graphic sex murals depicting Lou the Jew, buff guys in drag, and let's not forget, fucking Spider.
Oh,
fucking Jason
Momoa.
You watch this movie for the performances. Fuck the plot. After I was watching, I was like, fuck this plot. I don't care how this ends. And the ending made me excited. I thought, wait a minute. Is there a sequel planned? I was like, wait a minute. When was the sequel going to happen? Because I was kind of like, I've seen some of the shit we've watched. And I know Mr. Willis at the end of this journey of ours. He's probably the lead in these three movies for some detective night guy. And it's probably not going to be amazing. And this movie, spoiler alert, has a bit of a cliffhanger ending where there's supposed to be a sequel.
Yes.
And we don't get one. And I'm disappointed.
No, I don't know. That was optimistic, wasn't it? To shoot that. You know, that ending. To be continued style ending.
How about this? It's disappointing now knowing that it's not coming. I was like, you motherfuckers.
I would have liked a sequel.
Absolutely.
I mean, John Goodman deserves his day
in court. He deserves reappraisal.
He deserves to be in court for his fucking role in this travesty.
So Dick and Balls skateboarding through Venice for a long time. Finally goes to a guy's pizza shop to help him. He's got to go get it gets loose. He's got to go get a car. And he goes and he breaks into Spider's. And
Momoa
is fucking genius. Here's what I love. Momoa, Bruce Willis. You think action stars. I mean, Momoa is basically a Greek god brought to life, and it's unfair, and I know this. I know that Momoa could take any girl I've ever been with just the whisper of his name. Fine, I get that. The man is
Better looking than any girl I've had sex with. let alone take any woman I've had.
As Clarence Worley says in True Romance, Elvis is prettier than most women, and so is Jason Momoa. Right? He just is. But for the two of them to be totally against type, to not be over the top comedic, but to be leaning in deliciously into the comedic roles that this allows for. I have not enjoyed a movie we've been lucky the last 3 months I'm like, man, that really started to enjoy this. Now I know we are set up for fucking failure. 2024 is going to start off with a swift kick in the sphincter, and we are going to bleed for the next 12 videos. We are not going to have a good
possibly
turn. But this movie, I have not enjoyed a movie this much since the first one.
No question.
And we had talked about that this might be one of those ones, and I had heard this might be one of those ones that might turn in our favor.
You had alluded to that before, yeah.
And I'm going to stand firmly against the people of shit on this film. You're going into these movies, and Steve and I have learned this together on our journey with the Cheeky Bastards in this. And I think it's a good maturity that we've both done in our late 40s, which is not as rare for white males at this age to change. All right, let's be honest. Usually, like, feet in the mud. Oh, I like everything the way it used to be.
We can change. We can change.
Like Stallone says, if you could change, and we could change, then the world could change. Merry Christmas. Adrian, blow me. Anyway.
Your mother's an animal, you son of a bitch.
But if you're going into these films thinking you're going to see fucking Die Hard, or you're going to see Pulp Fiction, or you're going to see The Godfather, pull your heads out of your ass immediately. You're not. You have to know. But what has been fun about this journey is we have been surprised by films that are just absolutely being given. If you go by just their ratings and their numbers, they're not worth your fucking time. But if you are a person who enjoys movies, and I do think if I'm speaking to Gen Xers, which I feel like a lot of the people who listen to this are in this age, we come from an era of HBO, and here in America, USA Up All Night, Cinemax, or Skinemax as you knew it as, where they didn't have a lot of movies early on. So you would get good movies, but you would have a lot of B movies shoved down your throat, which is why they became cult classics, because we are the generation that took that in by the fucking truckload. Mm. And now, why are we the generation that is like, that's not good enough? What are you fucking talking about? What do you mean it's not good enough? It's exactly what we're used to. Put your 80s, your Gen X hat back on, sit down and enjoy some of these films for what they are. Now, Steve and I complain is that you don't go enough. Give us more. Go crazy like you did in the 80s. And you're not going to get the millennials to watch this shit, maybe, and you're not definitely not going to get the younger generation. But if you're putting in the people who are paying now, that's us, that's our generation, we're the money spenders. Give us something worth our money. Give us what we used to be babysat with, because most of us sat home as latchkeys watching this stuff that our parents didn't know we were watching, which is why we're the degenerates that we are now.
Exactly.
And that's perfectly fine.
So enjoy myself it. On that
yes,
shit.
Be a degenerate. We just want more. Give us more degeneracy. I want crazy. Look, we said we want to see tits and ass. They said, we got you, cheeky bastards. How would you like to watch for 3 minutes Bruce Willis or his stunt double? And that could be a game. Is it Bruce? Is it not? Is dick and balls going through the streets of Venice on a skateboard at night? Would you like that? Tough shit. You're getting 3 minutes of that in the beginning of this movie.
I'll buy that for a dollar.
So this movie gave us everything we kind of hoped for. Yes, the plot's a thing. But look, go back and watch some of your favorite films from the 80s, and they don't hold up like they used to when you were a kid. They just don't. You go, ooh, okay. But because you've grown. This is a movie that what I like about these guys, if they had just stuck with saying, fuck it, we're going to have fun the whole time, I would have gone for more lunacy and more lunacy on it. Because it did, at certain points, ratchet up to me like, this is... I'm like, yeah,
well,
Lou the Jew, and the paintings is he's getting
teabagged,
or he's getting fucked in the ass by a clown, or he's blowing the pirates. Like,
he's blowing Skeletor.
It was great. I loved every minute. I would buy those paintings. That's how bad it is.
Lou the Jew is giving Skeletor a blowjob, and then in the next mural, a Mexican wrestler
first one, a clown is supposed to be fucking him up the ass,
fucking
but where
him up
his
the
dick
ass.
Is he's fucking him in the belly button, because this ass is so high in the painting that dick is in his belly button.
But you know, this is like a caper movie where, you know, this is all about, ultimately the movie is all about Bruce Willis trying to get his dog back and his niece's belongings. All these things were stolen from his sister-in-law's house.
Yes.
And so Bruce Willis is used...
Who at the movie he may or may not be...
That was
for the second film. That was
mildly alluded to. But so basically, this is all about Bruce Willis trying to get his possessions back and his dog back. And it's just this kind of like snowball effect of all the characters that get involved in that. And that's it. And that's all you need.
And we get great, colorful characters.
Because it's well made, mm-hmm. it's funny.
It is.
Great music, colorful characters.
Yep.
It's just a solid piece of entertainment.
It's a Coen Brothers. I mean, it's like Coen Brothers on
weed
a bit. Yeah, yes, yes. Very Coen Brothers like. Yes, it's, yeah. You know, I mean, they're not as quirky, but...
That is being generous, though.
But it has, but you know what, in fairness, it keeps a California Venice Beach vibe
and
to
actually,
it.
And actually, I've actually been to Venice Beach, actually.
I have too, in Grand Theft Auto 5 and all those things. Like, I killed people there, running over there. Actually, I was like, that's beautiful.
I actually did go there, but it's just a colourful, fun movie. And I think everyone in it is having a good time, and mm-hmm. that rubs off. On you. You know, you kind of get seduced by it. You're having a good time.
When Spider rolls up on them in the corner.
Oh, that's the funniest.
And Middle Ditch kisses. You know, I know you think you're throwing a 24, but it's really a 42. And then he air humps. He points at his watch and then fucks the air. I knew right then and there that every single one of them was having one of the greatest moments.
I know we're halfway through this, but everyone listening should just literally just go watch the movie quickly.
Because I mean, it's hard to follow this movie. But I would give it away. I don't want to give it all away, but because it's irreverent. Yeah. It's sometimes
but it's
you just like
it's
it,
politically incorrect,
but it knows it and it addresses it as it's doing it.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter to these fucking whining pussies that are going to complain about it now, does it? It's knowingly politically incorrect. That's not going to fly in this day and age, is it?
When they walk in and they want to talk to that one, Christopher McDonald's in it, good old Shooter McGavin, and they want to talk to him. You don't know it's him until he cameos. Again, this is kind of Tarantino feel too, because also like you get cameos from people. You're like, holy shit, they're in the film, and they're like in it for a scene, and you're like, I wish he was in it more. But when he comes in, he goes, tell him that the friends of Lou the Jew is here, and the girl looks at him, and he goes, yeah, that's his name, Lou the Jew, and he goes, do it quickly. I just love how they don't allow them to say anything and have a hissy fit about saying Lou the Jew. They just send them on their way. It is such a fun fucking movie.
And again, you know, the more you talk about it, little things just come to you that just crack you up. And it's ultimately just a snowball effect of all these characters getting involved in, you know, it initially starts off with Bruce Willis trying to get his dog and his niece's belongings. Then it escalates into a suitcase full of cocaine.
Yeah, it just escalates into a whole bunch of craziness. And you, honestly, in its defense, you don't care.
Because
you keep getting introduced to more ridiculous scenarios or ridiculous things that happen that you're just like, I know my friend has already taken a shit in John Goodman, but when they go into this guy's club, the Prince, and John Goodman's got a fucking... He's just standing there, and he's just talking to the black security guard. Just the way he walks in, there's just something fun about him just like going, fuck it, I finally got a scene I could do something in. I'm going to do something completely crazy. It was very, very enjoyable. And one nod I have to say, because I am a Tarantino fan, in case you hadn't noticed that already, I did like when suddenly, for no reason at all, the table in his home flips over, and there's suddenly Southern Prepper's fucking ammo stash there. That one of the guns that the director put on there was the Czechoslovakian-esque Uzi with the silencer that he has in Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
And what's his name? Picks it up
when
and
he shoots
it to
Travolta.
Him. Yeah.
Spoiler.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't know? Sorry. 30 years
sorry,
ago.
Sorry, guys. I'm really sorry about that. Oh, I'm insensitive.
But I was like, that's a nice nod. I was like, all right, well done. Well done indeed.
I just remembered we've really jumped far ahead because I would like to, this has got a very...
let's be honest. At this point...
Well, we've only got 8 producers on this.
Well, you can tell. And you can tell that these guys were left alone.
Well, you can tell there's only 9 producers because you can see the money's on the screen.
Yes. Yes.
Not in their pockets. Well, the 2 guys who directed it, they wrote it and produced it as well.
And they did a pretty damn good job.
Well, I think Bruce is probably thinking, look, well, he does like to work with, like, up-and-coming directors, doesn't he? Like M. Night Shyamalan and people like that. He's done this before. Mm-hmm. Looper, obviously. You know, he's picked out some pretty decent, you know, early...
Because
you know,
he knows that those guys are hiring him for a job, and they're probably like, look, Bruce, we hired you to be you, to be Bruce. We want you to bring something to the screen as opposed to, hey, you want to be in a movie for $1 million just so we can put your name on the poster, and you can just, I don't even care what you do in this movie, which is what we've seen for a few of them. You know, and some have been saved by the other people in the cast. Bruce himself sometimes has disappeared. In this film, he can't disappear. The movie's all about him, and he does a fantastic job the entire fucking time. The entire time.
Yeah, like I say, you know, it's just nice to see him again. Nice to see him show up. Nice to see him front and center.
Mm-hmm. I smile the entire time.
Because it's a reminder, isn't it? It's like, oh, this is why you are, you know, this is why you are you. Well, this is Bruce Willis.
Well, it's nice to know that 6 or 7 years ago, we've seen a film where the aphasia may have started, at least for this film, at least in this moment, whatever it was, he had all his faculties.
Yeah.
He was able to be present and be a part of this film and look like he's actually having fun making the fucking movie.
Agreed.
Not since we saw the first one. Not since he got to be that fucking spicy, rah-rah American principal in the first one. Has he been as great in a film? He's been good in some of them, but because the rest of the film's been dog shit. But yeah. This one, you're like, oh, that's Mr. Willis. That's the guy we all know. And it was awesome to see. And for that alone, you have to see it. But again, I think you should take our journey. Because watching the stuff you know he's good in is one thing. But I think you need to see, especially now we have this information about aphasia, you can kind of start to see some of the blips. Some of the moments and this gives you a reference of being able to go, seeing like, okay, maybe he did mail it in here, but you get to see him act in a movie that he probably thought was going to make it to the big screen and have a longer run.
Also, that's important to remember as well. There are some very big budget Bruce Willis blockbuster movies that suck.
To the Last, Die Hard's garbage.
Well, you know, but... So what I'm saying is, you never know, you know, a small movie may not be great, but you should cut that one some slack, you know. So you can't just say, oh, these are just small, cheap movies. No wonder they suck. What's the excuse for these big motherfuckers that suck?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Agreed, 100%. Precious Cargo had a zero critics rating, and we enjoyed the hell out of that movie because it was just absolutely ridiculous. And PNG was the MVP. Like there's moments in these. You're like, oh yeah, this is great.
Yeah.
I mean, so Christopher Maloney last month in Marauders. Christopher Maloney, why is he not a leading man? He was like, look, I think Mr. Willis is no longer going to be able to do these things. I will step in now for him. And boom, there you go. I've solved your problems. You're looking for a Bruce Willis, fill in Christopher fucking Maloney. But anyways, we'll be starting a Maloney podcast. Maloney's not baloney, all right? Oh, whoa. All Maloney, no baloney.
I don't know if that'll last very long. That'd be just like a 3-episode special, yeah. But yeah, so, you know, we're sort of basically in a situation where, yeah, you've got an ensemble cast, you've got a decent budget, you got these young guys behind the camera, you know, producing
and
writing.
And they've got some talent. They have talent. They're just, you know, with just a little bit more tweaks.
Yeah, they've obviously just got a ton of ideas. But this is like their first movie.
Oh, agreed. But I'm saying they have the ability to write some great scenes.
But unfortunately, they haven't made anything else, have they?
Well, because they got fucking, as you call it, slagged down by these cocksuckers. I think unrightfully. I don't think what people think about this film is what it is. I really don't. I have a tough time with sometimes these reviews. And look, yeah, not every movie Citizen fucking Kane. It just isn't.
No, listen. It's just a lack of sophistication, isn't it? It's just like, look, is this movie as good as Pelleny movie out, The French Connection? Well, no, but it's not. You know, you've got to judge these things in different ways, and I don't think people. Ironically, a lot of these more vocal people on these like places like Letterboxd and IMDb, you know, I think they tend to say things like, you know, The Exorcist is a masterpiece, and you know, some Z-grade horror movie that shows up on Shudder now isn't. Well, no, of course it isn't, but that doesn't mean there's not fun to be had, you know. And this is the same situation.
I'm John, and I'm a sex addict.
Hi, John.
Hello. Just love sex. I love getting it. I love giving it. I love it too much, and I get it too much. That's my main problem. On that sex road, I've got my thumb out, waiting to get on one of the sex cars. I am also logging about 40 hours a week, but on sex, not just jacking off like this guy, right? Full-blown sex. And actually, come to think of it, it's more than 40 hours, so I'm doing time and a half. Yeah, I should get paid my overtime. I mean, obviously I'm not condoning sex for money. That's bad, right? We all agree, would you? Good. I really just have sex with any old thing that comes my way. There's some limits, obviously. Age 18 and below is no bueno, no good. Upwards, though, is where I really shine.
50, 60, 80, 90 centennials.
Okay.
All right, well, let's wrap her up with our final thoughts, and I get the pleasure here at Christmas time to impart upon you, my friends, my favorite scene to start with.
Favorite scene.
And I already mentioned it earlier, and we may steal each other's things here, and I do apologize.
This is inevitable.
My favorite scene is when Spider and his homie Oliver roll up on John and Steve on a corner. And what basically transpires is a game of who can make the other actor break character with the most lunacy stuff they're doing to one another in the moment. And I think it's Jason Momoa going against Thomas Middleditch, because those two are going back and forth. At one point, Momoa literally barks at Middleditch's face. And then he throws up the number sign. And I truly feel that Middleditch, from the way he says it and the reaction he gets, is Middleditch is letting him know as the camera's rolling, I know you think you're throwing up 24 in gang signs, but you're really saying 42.
You think that's an ad-lib?
I do. And that causes Jason Momoa to point at both of his watches for some reason on his wrist. I don't remember if he said anything. I think he might have, but I didn't hear, because he points at him. He thrusts in the air like he's fucking something invisible as they drive off. And I remember just laughing uncontrollably about, I don't know what just happened, but it may be comedic genius. And I was like, Jason Momoa, why was he not nominated for at least a Golden Globe for a supporting actor in a comedy or musical? I mean, Matt Damon wasn't. He wasn't in either. So I'm just saying. That was my favorite scene. I mean, there's a lot of great scenes, but for me, those four guys were just fucking great in that. And especially Thomas and Jason Momoa going back and forth was hilarious. Mr. Smith, I hope I didn't steal yours, but fire away.
Listen, I'm learning here, right? Over the last few months, that was my favorite scene. But
If you had gone first, I did have a spare.
Yeah, so I was like, I've written down is Bruce Willis naked on a skateboard, pulling a pistol out of his ass.
Basically, goes, well, that's that what that whole feels like.
Right. So to me, that scene is a little bit Coen Brothers.
Yeah.
Some of the camera angles and stuff is kind of like this. It's kind of letting you know the movie you're in for. So it's sort of like don't take this.
You're
shit
not in
too
for
serious.
LA Vengeance. So spoiler alert, not a lot of vengeance. Yeah, you're not so even really, in LA.
So basically, Bruce skateboarding naked at 2 o'clock in the morning with a hard on, probably because he's been boning that sex addict chick.
Yes.
And then he hides behind a traffic sign.
It's a newspaper box, it looks like. It's
something like that. Yep. Mm-hmm. So he hides behind an obstruction, let's say. He's questioned by a policeman, and he's stuck it to hide his revolver. He's shoved it up his own ass. And so I was like, I love this movie.
Give credit to a stunt double, because he's having to squeeze his cheeks around this fake gun to get the shot.
Maybe it wasn't a stunt double.
Maybe not.
But I don't know. But I'm just saying.
Only his doctor can tell for sure.
Exactly.
Only his proctologist knows for sure.
Oh, but like you say, yeah, then them two scenes are enough.
Oh, God.
To make anyone watch his movie. So get involved.
The first 15, 20 minutes, if you're not hooked to sit out the rest of it, then you're missing out.
There's plenty more where that came from, but they're two great scenes. But anyway, so yeah, that is my favorite scene.
Best one-liner.
All right, well, you will lead us off for the best one-liner / monologue or dialogue moment from Once Upon a Time in Venice.
Okay, so my favorite line is said by Thomas Middleditch as John. When the sex addict chick tells him he's cute, he says, well, I've been told I look like a young Roger Daltrey if he spent a lot of time with computers. That's my favorite line in the movie.
And the sad thing is, as soon as he said that, I looked at him, I go, Jesus, he does look a little bit like a weird Roger Daltrey if Roger Daltrey wasn't there. Like, I was like, that's actually spot on.
But I actually thought that was a pretty funny line, actually. I was like, the way, and he, you know, and obviously I don't know him as well as you do. I mean, I hadn't seen him in anything else.
He's a very quirky, funny guy, and that's his usual role. But he's good at it. Why change? It's a moneymaker. Yeah, why change it?
You're good at what you do.
Yeah, exactly.
Go with it. But that is my favorite line.
Mine is the opening monologue from Mr. Bruce Willis, which I did write out completely. Now, take in mind, Bruce Willis is at a skate park talking to a bunch of preteen boys. who probably were sitting there thinking he was going to talk to them about skateboarding, but oh no, he is having a midlife crisis in talking with them. And here's what he says. You just got to live your life. It goes by so fast. It's like a whisper. Before you know it, you're 12 years old, and where are you? I don't want you to make the same mistakes that I made. It starts like this. A little bit of weed, and then a little bit of blow, okay? And then a couple of bottles of tequila every week, and then three hookers 3 times a week. And yeah, it's fun in the moment. It's fun. But let me tell you something. Those moments always end up with your head feeling big, like a bus just ran over it. You happy about that? No, you're not happy about that. And then not long after that, you're sitting on your kitchen floor, buck naked. You've got a gun in your mouth, and all you're thinking about is today the day? Is today the day I pull the trigger? Bang! You got a right to live, and you got to live right. You get me? All right, let's go. It is a skate park. Let's go skate.
Yeah,
and the kids are sitting there going, what the fuck?
It's like Jules is just a gay band, man. They're like, But yeah.
I was like, oh, amazing opening speech. I'm like, I'm 5 minutes in, and I'm like, Bruce is back, baby. I was like, Bruce is back.
Boom. Agree.
Best performance.
All right, for our best performance, my best performance, man, these are tough. I'm doubling it up. For me, it's Jason Momoa and Thomas Middleditch. I think the two of them gave the best performance. Yes, this is a Bruce movie, and he's phenomenal. He's back, but they were just such great standouts in their side roles. Like, I know Bruce has this in him. I've seen this. I didn't know Jason Momoa had comedy in him like this. I did not know he had this ability. So my best performance were Mr. Momoa and Mr. Middleditch, as he stood toe-to-toe with some of these greats, and he deserved to be on screen with them. Mr. Smith, who do you have?
Best performance, Jason Momoa. I can't really probably back this up that much, but I've just got this feeling, right? Maybe he's not a Latino.
No, I think he might be. I think he might be Samoan.
No, sorry. No, I mean his character. Like, he might be a fake Latino.
And they don't know.
No, I'm sure there's a couple of times in the movie he says things I'm like, I don't think a Latino would say that. Like, he just uses these bits of, like, A, he gets the sign thing wrong, as is pointed out. And I'm sure there are a couple of times in the movie he says slang things that don't quite
land where they're supposed to. Yes.
They're kind of ultra cliche to the point where I'm like, they're cliche to the point where I think, I'm not even sure you're, I think you, he might be like, just a fake Latino gangbanger.
He just looks at it and fell into the right spot.
He's got a good tan.
Yeah, he was a Latino.
He looks
like,
good
I'm
in a
Latino.
Bandana and a vest. I think he's hanging out
and
with
the Fu Manchu.
Yeah, he's got the Fu Manchu over here. I just got the feeling that that would have made it funny. It kind of would have made it funny if it's kind of revealed at some point in the film that he's a fake Latino.
Yeah.
But for me, best performance, definitely.
Yeah.
And like you said, Jason Momoa, I've seen him interviewed, and
he's a hell of a guy. Yeah,
tell me who he reminds me of a bit. Kurt Russell. He's a big laugher.
Yes. I think he's built like a fucking Greek god, so of course he's going to get these.
Yeah.
But I think he's probably a better comedic performer than star.
But you know what I mean? Like, I've seen Kurt Russell interviewed as well, and they're big laughers. They're very jolly, happy people. And he's another one where I've seen him being interviewed, and he's a very, like, slap in his thigh, raucous sort of laughter type, big personality
big
guy.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think, like, you're right. I think it's probably too soon, but I think something is going to happen down the line where
he'll
reveals
get his,
himself to be like in Dumb and Dumber or something.
Or like The Rock in Pain and Gain. Or like John Cena in he's got his own show now, but also
The Peacemaker.
Yeah. You know, he's like, he's big, but he's like, he's more than just this big fucking
tough
guy.
Yeah, well, he's an actor, isn't he? An actor's a capable,
hilarious.
You know.
Yes.
But I think Jason Momoa's got potential to be in some quite madcap comedy movie at some point, and I think he's got the chops for it.
I do.
So definitely for me, I hear what you're saying. I can see why you'd be on the fence, but for me, so sorry to drag on, but the bit that you talked about, your favorite scene, that cracked me up.
Oh, it was great.
When he started doing the... When he mimics fucking his watches, he mimics fucking his own wrist while he's sat in the lowrider, I was fucking laughing. So I know where you're coming from on the best scene.
Oh, it was just great. It was just insanity.
And he, great performance. So yeah, for me, sorry, a run on, as I tend to do, Jason Momoa, definitely.
Favorite character.
Well, that will let you pick your favorite character. And I have a feeling we may have the same one. Or maybe not. I don't know. Who's your favorite character, sir?
Sorry. Well, I can keep this short, can't I? I'm just going to say Spider.
Hey, Spider, why don't you give me a fucking drink over here?
He's my favorite, hey, so I'll let you.
Joe
I'll
Pesci you doesn't take... shoot this spider, I tell you what. Yeah. He gives him a little more.
I'll let you take over. You can wrap that up.
Spider. And I almost feel like we're not giving enough credit to everyone else, but Willis is brilliant in this movie. But it's Bruce. Like, it's Bruce. It's a Bruce that if you are a fan of Bruce Willis, you have seen before, and you're like, oh, so refreshing to see him back. However, if you know anything of Jason Momoa, so if you're a Game of Thrones fan, or you watch him as Aquaman, like, he has moments of being funny, but he's, you know, he's peppered up as he's a pretty boy, but he's a big dude. So I think they're trying to push him to like these action star roles. I'm not saying he can't do them. He probably can. He's got the physique and the look for him, and he's a good actor. But I did not know he had this kind of comedic ability in him. Just like when John Cena was put into that new movie as the, you know, on the show The Patriot, but when he was in Suicide Squad, I did not know he had that ability. And when Batista was first in Guardians of the Galaxy, like, Batista, the wrestler? And then he comes out and you're like, oh my God, he's a comedic genius. I didn't know these guys. They're so against type that's why Momoa steals the show for me in this, is because, well, I didn't see this coming. Like, when I saw he was in, I was like, okay, this could be fun. I knew that if Momoa sucked in this movie was going to suck because it was just going to be some kind of cliche, oh, he's miscast. I was wrong, and I was pleasantly and happily wrong for it because he's able to go toe-to-toe with these other guys who are great actors. You know what I mean? Like, that's why I said, like, when Middle Ditch is doing that thing, I really do feel like they're trying to get each other the break. And, like, Middle Ditch had this great, I don't think you know, it's 48, and he just, like, and probably Momoa didn't know, and he just, like, points at his two watches for, like, instead of, oh, maybe saying, instead of you have 24 hours, you have 48, because I got two watches.
And he's maybe, talking. I don't know. I don't know.
It just
know.
Doesn't matter, because he just points, and he starts air-fucking
it,
and you're
make
just,
sense
like,
of that.
Exactly. So, yeah. Yes. Mr. Spider was fucking brilliant, but you're not going to be upset with any of these guys in it. Well, except for Goodman, if you're him, but whatever.
Oh, fuck knows what happened there.
I do believe we are going to go 2 for 2 on this one. I have no doubt in my mind, but it's time for the moment of truth.
The moment of truth.
And at Christmas, it feels good. It feels good to maybe get a Christmas treat like this. Even though 2024 may not have a whole lot of positive in store for us, but did Mr. Willis drop a Bruce or a deuce? And for me, if you didn't hear from the first second we started, Mr. Willis dropped a motherfucking Bruce because this is a Bruce Willis movie. Bruce Willis is back in this film, and all the people who hated it, go fuck yourselves. I don't know what movie you were watching or expecting, especially if you've been on our journey. This movie deserves a Bruce, and to me is the second best film we've seen in this 10-month journey, just below that first one.
He most definitely dropped a Bruce.
Mr. Smith. How say you?
Are we talking movie or Bruce?
We're talking Mr. Willis. Bruce or Deuce? I can't believe you sat back and put your hand to your chin for a second. You cocksucker. This isn't even on video. No,
I don't
see
want
what
to say
doing.
The things.
You're like a physical comedian.
I'm trying to not say what you've said, but say what you've said.
You look like a physical comedian doing a recording for an audio tape. Here's my joke, and it's all physical.
I'm British. We go Shakespearean. So I've got to look off into the distance. So it's either Shakespeare or Michael Mann, where I just stare off into the distance.
So now I've got to narrate what you do.
Yeah. You either got to narrate what I do, or you need a synthesizer rumbling.
Or I'm not turning this into a video podcast. I got too much to do.
No, obviously, this is a Bruce Willis on top form, really, in comparison to everything else that we've seen. You know, this is our 10th movie. Is that right?
10. Fourth of the way in. Yeah. Yeah.
There's been highs and there have been lows.
We've been
and
on
some
a nice,
of them lows.
We've been on a good trajectory right now, but I think we have reached the pinnacle maybe, and we might fall on this. We don't know. We might fall on the other side though.
Well, no, a lot of these movies have surprised me, you know, in their own little, in some in a small way, some in a big way. This whole movie is a surprise, and Bruce Willis, it's just like I said about the thing earlier, Eddie Murphy. It's nice to see these guys again, having a good time. And being the person we came up being into, do you know what I mean? Because, like, Eddie Murphy sucked for fucking years.
Decades, yes, I know. And that he didn't have aphasia. Yeah, he had no excuse.
As far
as
I'm concerned, the last good movie Eddie Murphy made was fucking Another 48 Hours, and that wasn't great either.
I mean, the last great movie Eddie Murphy was in was Shrek, and that was a voice. He wasn't even on screen.
Exactly.
he was an animated donkey.
Yeah, so, you know, so to see guys like, you know, these 80s guys that we grew up loving, having a good time at least is enough.
Mm-hmm.
So Bruce Willis, you know, is great in this. So he gets a Bruce.
He most definitely dropped a Bruce.
And ladies and gentlemen, in case you didn't know, is this movie a Bruce or a Deuce? It's a fucking Bruce.
This film most definitely dropped a Bruce.
In fairness, into his late career, before he goes on this final run here, which is coming up, of doing 26, I think it is, in a row, or 28 in a row of just nothing but straight to video, he, at least in this movie, puts in a performance worthy of some of his other ones. So maybe better than some of the diehards, like the last Die Hard especially he was in, and some of the other sleepwalks he did. This just, you know, it was a bunch of young guys, or not young guys, but newer filmmakers who, in the Coen brothers' hands, this is a fucking instant classic. The Coen brothers tidy this script up a little bit better, and this is one of the, it is in their vein. It just doesn't hit the plot points or the through lines that the Coen brothers are known to sew their stuff together. Same thing with the Tarantinos and the Paul Thomas Andersons of the world and those guys. They have just a little bit steadier hand, and they sew everything in better. That's all was missing. These negative, horrible reviews, stop. If you've seen the movies we've seen in these 10 months, this is definitely a fucking Bruce, and it was well worth your time, and it's as enjoyable a watch as it was, hopefully, this listen of our recap of it. Mr. Smith, close us out. What say you here on Christmas? Are you Ebenezer Scrooge?
Well, to paraphrase a line from Die Hard, it's Christmas. It's a time of miracles. And we close the year out with an absolute miracle, because for my money, this is better. I know, I'm British, we don't pronounce our T's, I'll say it again. For my money, this is better than Assassination of a High School President. By a hair.
Okay.
And that hair is the fact that Bruce Willis is in Assassination of a High School President, but Once Upon a Time in Venice is a Bruce Willis movie.
That is fair.
So it's negligible, really, which is better.
I get what you're saying.
But I get more Bruce in this.
Yes,
however
you do.
Great Bruce is in.
You get all of Bruce in this bad boy.
Oh, yeah.
You saw him in Pulp Fiction. You ain't seen nothing yet, sweetheart.
We ain't seen nothing yet. So, yeah, I would I recommend everyone who listens to this, you're going to have a good time with this.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other movies, you know, I wouldn't be quite so sure.
You might have to go on our journey to enjoy them, because
yeah, but I think this is just genuinely a crowd pleaser.
Yeah. Oh, agreed.
And the same with the and the same. So we opened and ended the year.
The year. Yeah. I definitely 2023. We opened with that and end with this, because it is the end of the year, but not the end of the season.
Not the end of the season, but you're gonna have a good time with this movie because it's just a genuine crowd pleaser.
Mm-hmm.
But thinking about the trajectory that we've gone through over the last 10 months, I think this is the best one.
Hmm.
We've set up coming in a close second, obviously.
I'm sure. No, I have no doubt that you, yes.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, he does not have the physical copy yet. Please reach out to us on the socials, which are in the notes, and I will get you his address, and we will get him a copy.
I want a copy signed by Ryan Philippe.
Only Ryan Philippe.
I don't want Bruce Willis's autograph on there. I won't.
And he'll also be really happy if you get it mushroom stamped as well. But that's up to you, folks. That's up to what you're up to you. What you're
but
doing.
Yeah, so no, definitely a Bruce.
This film was definitely dropped a Bruce.
You know, back in the day of the early Tarantinos, you had those kind of, you know, 3 days in the valley or Love on a 45. You had all these kind of Tarantino wannabes.
Yeah.
This isn't one of those. I think this is just doffing its cap to people like Tarantino and the Coen
brothers. And Coen brothers, for 100%.
It's kind of saying, look, we're not as good as you, but we love what you do, and this is our interpretation. That's all this is.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that.
It's like, what if John Wick was actually like a retired, out of shape fucking security guard?
Yeah.
And he didn't have all the resources that John Wick does.
Exactly.
What would you do?
So you know what? Yeah, it's just doffing his cap to, you know, the masters. Yep. But it knows it isn't as good, and that's okay.
Yes, I do believe it knows what it is. It doesn't think it's something more.
No, it's not saying like, oh, we can do what they're doing. No, it's kind of just referencing them. It's kind of like, yeah, like I say, just a little nudge and a wink to it.
Mm-hmm.
Playful, fun. Watch it. Have a good time. And Merry Christmas.
And we hope you enjoy your holidays, whichever you celebrate. We don't care. Enjoy them. Enjoy them with friends and families or whatever you do. watch a few of these. We hope you'll continue to check us out on the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network. We hope you will also listen to our new shows coming up in 2024.
Oh, we've got some good stuff.
We are going to start really going down the action.
We've got some good stuff
reprisals
there.
And stuff over on the Cheeky Bastards. And for the last two episodes of our technical first season on this 40-month journey, we have First Kill coming up in January, and then we will close out our first year of Dropping a Bruce with Acts of Violence. So we hope you enjoy the gems we've given
you. They sound good.
They sound amazing. But folks, enjoy this Christmas present we gave you with Jason Momoa and Mr. Bruce Willis. And we hope you have a great rest of 2023. We'll see you in 2024.
And that's a wrap on our 10th episode. Please feel free to reach out to us on the show's socials, which can be found in the show notes, and tell us what you thought about this film, how you feel about Bruce as an actor, or even to let us know what you think about the show. We'd also greatly appreciate it if you'd give the show a like, leave us a review, and follow the show on the Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network, where you can find other amazing podcasts dedicated to such iconic action stars as Stallone, Lundgren, Van Damme, Schwarzenegger, and Seagal. The link to the network can also be found in our show notes. So won't you please join us again next month as Steve and I will be reviewing Bruce's role in 2017's action thriller First Kill to see if Mr. Willis dropped a deuce or if he dropped a Bruce. Until then.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
This has been a Man with an Exceptional Beard production.